I don't want to be alarmist, but it's almost like the NBA is starting to break. Like it's coming apart at the seams.
Right.
And the reason that I've sort of arrived at that is that I've always had a view that we're kind of trending in that direction. And really this year, what's actually happened in the last, call it 12 months, has really demonstrated some of the cracks.
Welcome back to the Basketball Forever podcast, where we talk about the things that we don't post about. I'm Nick Kelland, Head of Strategy here at Basketball Forever. I'm joined, as always, by a guy who's not wearing a Derek White jersey today, Alex Sumsky, founder of Forever Network.
We also replaced the... who was it? Who do we have?
Reggie Bullock.
Brett Bullock, yeah, the Mavs jersey.
The Reggie Bullock Dallas Mavericks vintage item.
We thought a James All-Star jersey would be a little bit more fitting.
I feel like it maybe fits the mold a little bit better, but I reckon you give it 5 years, a Reggie Bullock Dallas Mavs jersey probably fetches more at like a collector's item auction. It's just niche and rare.
No, I know that what you're saying right now, you're not being serious.
I am.
No, you're not. There's no way. Don't start the episode off with something like that.
We need a social sports betting exchange where I can create a bet against you on that. I'll tell you what, there's plenty of those. It's not a lot of Reggie Bullock Dallas Mavericks jerseys. Just leave it at that.
Well, that we can agree. We can agree on.
Basic supply and demand. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Anyway,
it's good that we're back here.
It is. We're back in the New York studio. Last episode was probably our best ever, I would say, from a pure viewership standpoint. And
a million views. Finally cracked that milestone. And I dare say it had to have something to do with this.
I think so. Just better quality, better sound, obviously better lighting.
Mm.
You and I looked maybe slightly better on a video feed.
Maybe. It's better than the old dingy office. That's
correct,
for sure.
So, good to be back. Good to be back with you. I know that we sort of have been in the lab over the last week thinking of different ideas and different storylines that we can be talking about. It's a busy year for basketball. We've obviously got the Olympics.
Very busy.
On the horizon. Before that, you've got the playoffs and the finals. We're in a bit of a dead spot in the NBA season. So talk to us. What did you come up with?
I mean, it's one of those things, right, where this is always like the toughest part of the year. Always. Like you get to mid-March and then it's this grind. It's like this four-week grind to get to mid-April for, the playoffs, basically. It's a little bit more interesting with the race for the play-ins now. That's probably a positive, but like we all know, this is awards time.
Yeah,
it is
awards season.
It's where the players lock in to get their individual accolades. All the shitty teams just throwing in the towel completely.
Yep,
100% self-focused. It becomes like we could see some of the toughest watches for Wizards and Pistons game.
Yeah,
perhaps. For any NBA game in human history.
I was going to say the Wizards are currently in the midst of a 16-game losing streak. They're officially now the worst team in the league, which was, if you had asked me a month ago if that was possible, I would have said absolutely not, given Detroit had lost, 25 straight, essentially. But the Wizards are the tank to the bottom is real.
But what's even crazier to me with that Wizards team is, I don't know if you remember, you definitely would remember, actually. I don't know why I'm saying that. The preseason, it was their first game, or Jordan Poole's first game, or second game, one of the two. He drops 41.
Yeah.
And everyone was like,
"They're back.
He's a little smoky for scoring leader."
I tipped him as scoring leader and most improved.
For $41.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Guess what he didn't do?
I'm going to be honest with you.
That.
Not only did I do the same thing, I took him in one of my fantasy leagues.
Yeah.
I had him as a keeper.
Yeah.
Because when he was on the bench, he was like, so as a bench player, like you're looking at, basically, 25 points per game if you extrapolate out for like per 36, right?
Yeah.
As a starter.
On a bad team, by the way, with much higher usage. It's reasonable to assume he should have probably averaged somewhere in the 25 to 30 range this year.
The fact that we can go from 25 points per game down to 15 from bench to starter is, I actually think it could be unprecedented.
Well, he very clearly, to sort of, I guess, like bookmark this point with Jordan Poole, he clearly loves not starting games against the opposition's best perimeter defender because since going back to the bench 10 games ago, even though the Wizards have been dog water, he's been good again.
Yes.
He's averaging 25 off the bench the last 10 games.
Yes.
So
he's gone back to that original output.
It's like a Lou Williams sort of thing. Jamal Crawford, I think some players just genuinely prefer to see the pace of the game come in and play against inferior opposition where you can let your sort of like offense shine.
Mm-hmm.
And those three were all small guards who had shifty handles and could sort of score at all three levels. So it obviously translates to, you know, playing against the eighth and ninth guys on the other team.
It does, but then it hasn't made for very entertaining basketball regardless.
Probably segues quite nicely into the topic of today's conversation.
Exactly. I mean, you know, when we're in these like tough periods, it does sort of put like a big microscope on everything that's going on from like a gameplay perspective in the NBA. And one of the conclusions that I sort of arrived at, and I definitely wouldn't be alone in this thinking, but perhaps the way that I sort of am putting it now is I don't want to be alarmist, but it's almost like the NBA is starting to break. Like it's coming apart at the seams.
Right.
And sort of the reason that I've sort of arrived at that is that I've always had a view that we're kind of trending in that direction. And really this year, what's actually happened in the last, call it 12 months, it has really demonstrated some of the cracks.
Right.
Like they've absolutely started to show, case in point, the All-Star game. That's... you know, that's a big one. But even what, you know, another sort of symptom of this is what was happening with Team USA at the most recent World Cup. And all of this kind of hinges on the fact that we're at a point in time where offenses are almost too efficient. You know, it was kind of beyond the realm of what was probably comprehensible back in the day. But like All-Star game right now, you're looking at the highest scoring one ever, the biggest total ever, and all that resulted in was the worst game we've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And then on top of that, the worst ratings we've ever seen.
Yep.
So no one was enjoying it. The fans weren't enjoying it. The like TV audiences weren't enjoying it, and the players.
Adam Silver, the literal boss of the league, basically like took a jab at both teams in the post-game awards ceremony, if you remember that as well.
He had a lot riding on it, though. He brought executives and he made a big hoo-ha about this is going to be the rebirth of the All-Star game, and they went back to East versus West. He brings, sort of major players to sit courtside because, you know, he's thinking about the TV rights deal. He's
at Apple and Netflix and
making a big impression, and all of them were left with a bad taste in their mouth, and he was probably couldn't contain his bitterness.
Yeah.
But, you know, all of this has come down to, you know, spacing, shooting, and athleticism is at all-time highs.
Yeah.
And it's really started to build unstoppable offense. I don't know how you sort of feel about this, but I've sort of started to notice from where we were, call it 10 years ago, or maybe a little bit further. Like if you want to go back as early as 2013, 12, but you know, really it was, you know, the NBA was still full of variety. There were a bunch of different sort of schemes and offenses that were being run. We used to see some beautiful Spurs basketball back then too. You know, the Lakers ran the triangle. Everyone had their own brand. The Lakers ran the Princeton offense back then, but you know, regardless, it was, you know, D'Antoni was sort of starting to, you know, that was kind of one of the first symptoms.
Yeah, well, that was a Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni led effort, right? Mm. And that was, you know, in the most like Moneyball way possible. It was the first, I reckon, collision of like deep analytics and the product, right? And what we actually saw on the floor, to the point where teams were going and then constructing rosters of players who seemed, by all basically intents and purposes, apart from the fact that they could shoot from distance, pretty flawed in many elements of their game, and building rosters around ball dominant, ISO heavy players, right? That was sort of how it began.
And it's what's so funny about that is obviously that, and then with Harden leading to this obsession with a 3-point shot, I almost feel like Harden and the Rockets and what D'Antoni was doing was worse than what was happening with Curry in the early days. It wasn't until sort of Steve Kerr took over from Mark Jackson that it became just a little bit of out of hand with the adjustments that he made. But, you know, you compare that was sort of like, I guess, the apex. And then it just all kind of regressed from that point forward. We're at a point now where there is no sort of different brand of basketball across all teams. It is it is basically 25 teams. I mean, there's obviously differences, right? Like, this is a bit of a general statement, but more or less 25 teams are all doing the exact same thing. The five that aren't are historically dog shit.
Yeah.
That's when the first cracks started to show. And, you know, we've touched on this in previous episodes, you know, when we were like the last one, when we were talking about, you know, who was going to be the next to have an 80-point game.
Yep.
Right. That's 70% of the best performances statistically since the merger all came in the last 16 months. And I think, you know, 50 players now are averaging 20 points per game.
Yeah.
That's a league record.
Yep.
There are eight. There are eight players today that are scoring more and putting up better statistics than what Michael Jordan did in his final MVP season.
Considered like, you know, the lion of the pack, right?
Yeah.
The apex predator.
But when you're like thinking about this from an eye test, are you seeing eight players that are all better than Michael Jordan?
No, of course not, right? I mean, you go back to, we were talking about this off camera before, you know, Domantas Sabonis is basically on path to break like Wilt's records.
Yes.
Like Sabonis.
What
are we doing?
how did this happen?
Yeah.
Like, you've got sort of major groups in the NBA that have become extinct. You've got like pass first point guards, which, I mean, there was a time where like Chris Paul was transformative.
Yeah.
Every college point guard needed to be Chris Paul in order to crack the league. That's disappeared. You've got, you know, big men that, you know, there's no one that goes to post up and go to work anymore, that they're extinct as well. It's shoot the piss out of the ball. That's the new mantra. And really, most teams believe that the first shot is the best shot and it should be a three.
Yeah.
And that has created this like hyper efficient offense where, I mean, the spreads at the totals, I meant to say, for a lot of the matchups you see are now like, we're seeing all time highs. Right?
Yeah, most games will open, you know, point totals around like 235 to 240. And then when you get like two pretty bad defensive teams matching up against each other, see every week there's a new point total that's like a record high in the 240s and 250s, which is like, it's bizarre, right? Like, I've sports bet for a long time on basketball.
Yeah.
Religiously, point totals used to be in the 200s to 215 range.
But we're now
250s.
Does it make you not want to touch the overs?
No, I'll never stop betting overs. I will die on the hill that anyone who bets unders is a coward.
I know.
Why are you watching basketball hoping that players will miss? Because there's no defense being played, so you're hoping that players are missing open looks.
Yeah.
What product is that? Like, what are you?
This comes back to my point.
Yeah, it's true.
Broken NBA. Yeah. Like, broken viewing experience, broken fan experience. You look at the Warriors, right? There was that Warriors 2016-17 era. This is widely considered the greatest team ever assembled. They were the best team in NBA history, best win record, that 2016 team, 73 wins. Yet their offense then, which was league leading, would be the 27th best in today's NBA. Ahead of just teams like we were talking about, the tough to watchers, like the Wizards and the Pistons. I mean, this comes back to the point as well. MJ, we're not, is every team better than the Warriors back then? No, it's not. But we've pushed the NBA into this direction so aggressively. It's at this tipping point and it's all sort of, you know, starting to spill over. It's like the entire system is at a point where it could just topple over Big Short style.
Yeah. I mean, look, like, I think that there is absolutely no doubt that the adjustments will need to be made. And look, there are still like there is a market for defensive-minded, defensive-nose players, right?
Yes.
Why Rudy Gobert and OG Anunoby demand more on the trade market than James Harden, right?
Sure.
So the appetite is there, and there is still a role to play for, again, hard-nosed defensive players. But that's that fraction of the league. You got a bench guy who can score 13, 14, 15 points in bunches, who literally can't play defense on the other end, who's going to demand significantly more than a guy who can contribute above average defense, playing 25 minutes a night and shooting the ball twice. Like, system players don't exist. Role players really don't exist right now, like in the old school traditional sense of the world. And I do think that some of the way that the game is refereed now and the rules are in a state where there is a parity that needs to be drawn. I've got my own personal ideas about what can be done in the league to sort of close that gap a little bit.
Well, but do you even think that we're at that stage yet where, I mean, so just coming back to your point on like defense,
yep,
and how they still carry like more value. Well, you know, we're only trending in one direction, right? And that's offense. And that offensive efficiency is just like exponential growth year on year. And that's not sustainable. You know, that there'll be a ceiling where things sort of fuck up.
Yeah.
Either the fans suffer and it becomes a horrible product, you know, or we need to make an adjustment. But if we keep going in that direction, does the pendulum swing the other way and suddenly we're not looking at those defensive players?
Yeah, 100% it does, right? Rudy Gobert's contract, I still believe, is going to age really, really poorly.
Yeah.
And I think that trade is going to age really badly as well. It's not because Rudy Gobert is not a good player. It's because his style of play is not married to the modern NBA game.
Yeah.
Right? In 3 years' time, your armchair critic's going to be like, well, here's a guy who scores 10, 11 points a game and, you know, rebounds the ball. But any 7'2" guy you stick under a rim is going to rebound the ball.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, it doesn't matter if he's like a historically gifted defender, which he is, by the way, and he impacts winning, always has done. Doesn't matter. It's not good enough anymore. You know what I mean? If your big man's not shooting step back 25 footers,
yeah,
what's he doing?
Yeah. That's why it's that discussion of like, we're at the point where either the product dies,
yep,
or we need to change the rules.
Yep. So what are you thinking?
Well, the top of mind for me, like the ones that sort of I automatically always thought was, you know, the obvious is getting rid of the 3-second rule.
Yep. I'm fully in support of that. Abolishing it or upping it's like 5-6 seconds.
I think abolish it. I think because at the rate at the moment, I think getting rid of it altogether is probably the best. I think if you move it to 5 seconds, it's not going to
like tenure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the idea of a big man just setting his feet.
Yes.
Just like keep the restricted zone restricted, but let him operate.
Less one on one.
Let him anchor the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Let him run safety. Let him like quarterback the defense from there. I like that.
And an extension of that is, you know, allowing hand checking again.
Yep, 100% agree.
We need to push the pendulum back down the defensive route.
Yeah,
it used to be defense wins championships, and now it's we all play money ball with how we create our offensive structures, and that has eliminated the need for defense. We need that back in order for it to be like a valuable experience for the audience, for the fan, to enjoy game to game. So they're the first two that I think absolutely come to mind. Another one that I don't know how to make this come to fruition. But if pace and scoring is going to continue to trend this way and the 3-point shot's not going to die, do we consider, I don't know, getting rid of the 3-ball in a way? Altering it somehow.
I have a theory on that. There's a really good Twitter follow I recommend everyone takes up, Kirk Goldberry. Very good analyst. We'll shout him out at the end of this episode. But his big thing and his theory on how to fix this problem is by abolishing the corner three. So you drag the 3-point line out. You essentially think of like your basketball court looking like this.
Yep.
Right? You just draw the hemisphere from where the sort of apex point is right now.
Yep.
Extend that to the sideline. And so you basically just have a curve. And if you're shooting
that's clever
corner jumpers, right, it's a mid-range shot now, right? It becomes a 2-point shot. Defenses will stretch, which means that there's more opportunity to attack and put heat on the rim. And it means that your shooters are still going to be like, you know, accessing spots on the floor to score from. But a corner three right now is like a, it's like an 18 footer.
Yeah.
People, it's like, so that blows totals up, blows defenses up. I like the idea. I think mechanically, like, it would take some getting used to, but I don't mind the idea of saying, like, all right, let's find different ways to play offenses, different ways to get downhill. Let's get creative with the way that we think about it. At the moment, it's like, I'm an ISO heavy, super athletic, like ball dominant guard. I can beat my guy off the dribble, collapse the defense. And if you get a guy who just overhelps a little bit from like a weak side corner or strong side corner, I'm kicking it and I have an open shot, right? Or I have it contested. But it's like that product of basketball is like, I don't love watching that. I would love the idea of being like, let's drag it out.
Yeah.
Let's make them 22 plus footers religiously. Yeah. And let's see them operate.
Right? That's really interesting. This is what I had in my mind. So my diagram is going to be much cruder, and Kirk's is a way better version of what I had.
Get it up on the screen so everyone can see it.
My one was like, you've got your court here, and instead of your 3-point line coming out like this, it was just a line that went across the top of the court. And that, so there's no 3-point line. It was just one there.
Yeah.
So everyone had to take like 35 footers
basically
in order to drain threes. So there was still value in it, and you could still pull up from half court and do those deep, like, Lillard threes and Steph ones and, you know, the logos and all of those, which is really the most entertaining threes in the game.
I agree.
But then it creates everything else is, you know, we have to revert to mid-range, and then old school ball or like mid-2000s becomes like valuable again.
I know you were feeling pretty passionately about Team USA and how, the brand of basketball and the NBA specifically is not really reflective of how it looks on a global scale.
Yes, even with some of the rules, right? Like we're talking about, you know,
FIBA, like the live rim
and 3 seconds and all the rest. You know, not needing to do, you can sort of just do your, you don't need to do man, basically. But the thing about Team USA, and I mentioned this at the beginning of the episode, but this is another crack that's correlate, like that shows, and it comes down to the fact that you've got the teams that are utilizing this offense that we're talking about, and even what you're referring to, this ISO ball, at an international level, isolation plays are the 8th most efficient play that you can make.
Yep.
Yet, like there's something wrong there. In the NBA, in this vacuum of this one league, like ISO is, you know, bread and honey for a bunch of teams, bunch of players. You know, championed by the James Hardens and the D'Antonis of the world that led this league into this direction, yet it's the eighth efficient like structure when looking at like international ball. Like there's something heavily wrong with that.
What's number one?
Number one,
ball reversals.
Ball reversals are the most important. So it's actually not ball reversals. It is. I can tell you actually. It's cutting,
right?
Cutting, like, and like transition stuff. But in terms of like half court offense, reversals are one of the biggest things that you can use to like, you know, correlate between
like an indicator of success, right?
And highly efficient offense. Yeah. Just to give you some sort of, you know, perspective on that, and this sort of speaks to the broader point of, you know, this parity issue with the NBA and then global basketball. The Team USA sort of, you know, they work together and they like assemble talented players, but they do revert to ISO ball a lot.
Yep.
Even under Coach K, there was still like they worked together as a team, but it did get sort of like progressively worse. And that's because, you know, the NBA encourages it with, you know, the quick shot all the time, but in reality it's, you know, it's not the way that the rest of the world are playing. The pass reversals basically indicate higher efficiency in every single tournament across all the top 10 teams.
Yep.
The teams doing 3+ on any play see a 3x increase in some instances in offensive efficiency, up to 3x. It can be like, you know, 2, but some have seen 300% increase, which in turn actually slows down the game. And it places a stronger emphasis on a need for defense, which is not like not how NBA players like to play. But it's one of the most like fascinating and interesting differences in that it's this like desire to chase efficient offenses. The most efficient on a global stage are the ones that are slowed down.
Yeah.
The reversals, and you know, as the NBA sort of like falls more and more in love with pace in this direction, they've like become less and less capable of dominating on the world stage.
Yeah.
If you go back all the way to 2008, they used to win every game by double digits. And that's when, you know, their ball movement was at its best. Then by 2012, they were seeing single-digit wins. 2016, those instances had doubled. And then we saw in 2019 World Cup, Team USA lost Australia in the exhibition matches. Then they went into the tournament. They lost a bunch. They were bounced out. They were a younger team. Everyone gives them a pass. But then in 2020, they suffered their first Olympic loss ever in terms of from a game perspective. Then they went to the World Cup. They were bounced out again.
Well, they didn't medal.
No.
Yeah. They finished fourth, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a complete failure. Complete failure.
Yep.
And now they've sort of, you know, assembled their, you know, super team. My hot take is that it won't make a difference.
So you're telling, okay, hang on a second.
I'll tell you why.
So all this is being considered, right? But you don't think that the talent bank of KD, Steph, Anthony Edwards, Tatum, Embiid, Curry, that will not be enough. That will not be enough to get over Germany, Serbia, Australia. I can't get on board with that.
So they'll probably win gold, right?
They'll probably win gold. Yeah.
What I think though is that the you know, those double digit like blowouts. You know how KD came out and he's like
40 or 50. Yeah.
It will not, mark my words, will not happen. We won't see 150. Okay. Maybe like South Sudan or something.
Yeah,
like
if
that.
They're playing like a
one competitive matchup, you're never gonna see that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
The USA rank last every tournament in passes per game.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
And their passes per game have decreased tournament by tournament, and their results have gotten worse and worse and worse.
Yep.
And the differences between where they're at and where all their opponents are at.
Going like this.
Exactly.
And it all correlates perfectly. You still got Steve Kerr at the helm, so I doubt that their style of play is going to change anytime soon.
It probably won't. And if you look at like teams like Lithuania, who beat USA in the World Cup in that game, you had Valanciunas, you know, as their best player, who can be fringe at the best of times. The Lithuania doubled USA's reversals.
Yep.
And like that is what happens. This is how, you know, complete $15 odds opponents will get a dub.
So you're saying take the minnow spreads in every game against the US.
Yes.
Bet against the US. There's value there. They may not win, but like bet against
early them. In the tournament, you should be taking the opposition's handicap.
Yeah.
Any alt lines you can get.
Yeah.
Religiously. Yep. First three games, smack it. Smack it. And it'll more than likely hit.
Well, got an exciting year of NBA basketball to come. I think we're going to see some defensive changes. I do think there are going to be rule changes because I think the league is sort of, there's smoke there. There's definite smoke in the way that they're thinking about it and the way that we're talking about it.
Yeah.
Got an Olympic year coming up. It's only really the beginning of the way that we're thinking about hoops on a world stage. You know, we're excited to monitor the way that the game continues to evolve and we'll always be presenting these analytics, this data and the way that we think about how the game continues to change, even just the 20 years that we've watched it. So,
should we call this episode The Big Short, the
we
NBA?
We might call it The Big Short in the NBA.
That could present some good graphic opportunities.
Always a pleasure, Alex.
Always.
See you next time in that seat.
Yes.
Until then, see you in basketball forever. Thanks for watching.